Good morning, everyone. We will begin this informal hearing on case number PU-24-10. It is March 22nd, 2024, 10:02 a.m. I'm Randy Christman, Chair of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Julie Fedorchek. Did either of you have any opening comments before we start?
I don't.
No.
Okay. So then we'll get right in it. I've identified the commissioners here. Before we go any further, could we just send the microphone around the room and have everyone identify themselves for the record, please?
Rob Frank, staff.
Brian Johnson, PSC staff.
Tara VC, Montana Dakota Utilities.
Travis Jacobson, Montana Dakota Utilities.
Lisa Morstead with Montana Dakota Utilities.
Darcy Nigam with Montana Dakota Utilities.
Lee Clark, staff.
Okay, thank you. And online, do you have anyone online for this? Is Victor online?
Yes, I am. This is Victor with staff.
Good morning, Victor.
Morning.
Okay. So this is an informal hearing, so this will involve only undisputed information. If we get into anything that is disputed, we'll have to stop this and reschedule and do a formal hearing. The company typically goes first in an informal, so I will turn it over to whoever is taking the lead on it. Is that you, Travis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman. And in front of you today is our request for a waiver. On February 26, 2024, we submitted a request for a tariff waiver, and that waiver is to allow us to spread the annual surcharge over 24 months versus 12 that's stated in the tariff. And Tara has a short presentation, and then we'll be available for questions. Tara?
Yes, hello. Thank you, Travis. So just to kind of level set and get everybody on the same page, I just wanted to remind everyone that Montana Dakota really operates within two regional transmission organizations. So we operate within MISO and within SPP. And within each regional transmission organization, there are kind of two markets, an energy market and a transmission market. And then further within that energy market, there are three real components. There's the energy, the losses, and the congestion components. And Montana Dakota operates within all three of those areas in the MISO market. And then in the SPP market, we operate in the losses and the congestion market.
Can you say the three in MISO again?
Sure. Energy, congestion, and losses.
And what do you mean by losses?
Line losses.
Okay.
So, as you know, Montana Dakota has incurred significant costs as a result of elevated congestion costs within SPP and MISO. So both of those would apply to us. And those costs resulted in the company requesting and receiving a waiver to hold the fuel and purchase power rates flat from October 2023 through March of 2024. And these costs have also resulted in Montana Dakota filing a complaint with FERC against MISO and SPP about those congestion costs. So all of that leads me to why we're here today, which is to request a 24-month recovery time frame of their deferral balance included in the annual surcharge adjustment. This requested extension would allow the company to recover a portion of the deferred balance without over-recovering in the event the company is successful in the FERC complaint. So in this surcharge adjustment, Montana Dakota has included over $1.9 million of margin sharing credits associated with its Rate 45 customer that would have been included in the monthly filings that would have taken place November through March had we not received that first waiver to hold those fuel and purchase power rates flat as a result of that ESA settlement agreement. So the total cost of fuel in this filing is 4.535 cents per kilowatt hour, and the change in the surcharge component results in an increase of $88.80 per year for the average residential customer using 800 kilowatts a month, kilowatt hours a month. So absent that $1.9 million credit, there would have been an additional $4.32 added on to that piece. If we recover the deferral over the 12-month period that's in our waiver or in our tariff right now, it would, of course, be approximately double that as far as the effect on the customer.
So repeat the numbers again on
Repeat the numbers again, the initial numbers. I got the per kilowatt, but what would be the monthly?
So it would be $88.80 per year for the increase for the surcharge portion. Okay. So that would be about $7.40 a month.
Yep. Can you, okay, I need you to go back a little bit too and break them down. Skip the per kilowatt.
Okay.
Just what, there's the regular charge and the surcharge, right?
Correct.
So what did we set the regular charge at, that rate, in November? What did we set it at? What was that based on?
So our October rate was... our October rate was for secondary customers, it was 2.889.
Okay, and so that has, that regular amount has been charged, right?
That is the amount that has been charged. Yes.
And what is that average per month for the customers right now? Or the total amount, whatever it is?
So let's go. That would be about, let's see. It's going to be about that's going to be about $23 a month.
Okay, so that's what they've been paying for their fuel charges on average, right?
Right.
And then they're going to be adding this onto that.
So this it's going to go, and I just saw it. It's 2886. Sorry, not two. I think I said.
Okay, that was the rate.
But, 2.886 cents per kilowatt hour is what's being charged right now, and that will increase to 4.535 cents.
For secondary customers.
For secondary customers, which is a residential customer class, is part of that. For primary customers, it will go from 2.787 to 4.539.
Okay. So, and that, the number you gave is not the of whatever total amount is in the uncollected. What is that?
So that number
has been undercollected at this point.
So the number that I gave in the currently effective rates is going to include actually a credit for the surcharge because that we were in a overcollected state last year at this time. So that would include a credit of 0.212 cents per kilowatt hour. Then the new number, the new filing, includes a charge of 0.713 cents per kilowatt hour based on 24 months.
I'm still having a hard time getting these numbers. I think you guys are going to have to chart them all out. But,
well, I'm glad I'm not alone. typically, we have a gross dollar amount that is sought to be recovered. And then that, and for like residential and industrial or primary and secondary or however. And then at that dollar amount, you have it calculated down to that is point something per kilowatt hour. And then we typically, because we have people listening that are primarily residential customers, mm-hmm. it's usually pointed out what, and the use case, I think you always use 800 as your average kilowatt hours per month, what that monthly impact would be. And here, in this case, I'm looking at docket number 9. Mm-hmm. And on the second page, we go in that third paragraph from talking about 1.6 cents per kilowatt hour. And then in the next paragraph, we're talking about 412,000 plus 1.5 million. And then in the fifth paragraph, we're back down to 1.752 cents. And
so
I can't follow.
You're
it.
All
I'm
over
sorry.
The place. You do you all have the filing from this month?
Mm-hmm.
I have it extras here. If
I need
you don't
one,
have
then
it.
I have just this docket 9 with me at the moment.
Oh, isn't that the filing from this month?
I believe it is.
Okay.
So
okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
the month. March 15th.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Have it.
So if you turn to Exhibit B, page 4. That is that value of the $23.2 million is reflective of the...
Okay, hold on. And tell us where you're looking, Carol.
So Exhibit B, page 4, down here.
Okay.
Do you need another copy, Commissioner Houston?
No. Keep going. Oh.
Page 4?
Exhibit A.
Oh.
Keep going
Exhibit
back.
B?
Yes.
It's coming.
I'm sorry.
Back.
Okay.
So this number right here is reflective of the total deferral balance that it was in effect as of January 2024. And that balance includes a credit of $1.5 million, which is the very last line over here, that is reflective of the Rate 45 margin sharing credit that we would have put on our fuel and purchase power cost filings had we filed November through March.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So then that is the total number that is the deferral balance right now. If you move a couple pages
but
forward.
That was January.
As of January.
Is that what we're talking about right now, January? February isn't included?
It's cumulative from, that's a good point, cumulative from the end of January 23 to the end of January 24.
I see. Okay. That's how much we're behind.
Right. So if you move to Exhibit B, page 2, at the very top of that page, we're taking that $23.2 million that you saw on page 4.
Hold on. Okay. Start again, please.
We're taking that $23.2 million that you saw on page 4. And then because this is in March and we don't have, we're still going to be receiving credits because we're requesting that this be effective April 1. So we still are going to be having activity in that deferral balance for February and March. We're forecasting out that information based on the credit rate that's currently in effect for the surcharge to come up with a total of 23.859, which is under the additional recovery required area. We're then forecasting out, in this instance, 24 months of sales volumes, which total down here, and then the calculation of that is coming up with a rate per kilowatt hour for the surcharge.
And does this assume that you're going to still have the congestion costs? How do you predict those in, like, the summer and stuff?
So
the congestion will go back up.
Right. So the way that the tariff works is that we're not able to, we aren't able to forecast those congestion costs. We take the over under collected balance as of the end of January forecast February and March and move forward with that to create the surcharge
for the year.
Yeah, that is created for the year.
And just a reminder, our monthlies are based on 4 months of historic. So as we go through the summer, if we do see higher prices, it's always a lagged, just based on our tariff.
So we're probably going to be behind by the end of the year again. Because you don't see those congestion costs changing, or, you know, they're going to keep it up this summer probably, don't we think?
So I think maybe Darcy can address that a little bit.
So at least looking forward, there were a couple of mitigations, you know, pieces that, you know, Basin and Southwest Power Pool put in place. You know, one was the talk of a remedial action scheme. And that did go in service on March 1st. And since then, we have not seen, you know, this month to date, at least the binding congestion that was occurring. You know, the other one that we get is the other change that happens as we go from the winter ratings back to the summer ratings that we end up having on the 230 line. So in visiting with Basin and as far as how they foresee the summer coming, you know, they don't see it returning to that same level of congestion that we ended up having last year.
And why?
So part of that is the headroom that's made from the remedial action scheme. Mm. So the one
can you explain that?
I can.
What the remedial action
is? I can. And so one of the ways that you can minimize, you know, a shortcoming in the transmission system itself is to put in some sort of a special tripping, you know, line tripping sort of scheme that's put in place. So in other words, if you want to be able to run at a higher load, avoid congestion, and what's causing the congestion to occur, it's always something, an overload that happens after one outage happens. So currently the congestion that we're seeing is if the 345 kV line that goes from Charlie Creek, which is by Fairfield up to the Watford City would trip, there's a parallel 230 line that's going to overload. And so what the market and the reliability coordinator are trying to do are to reduce flows that would be going across the 230 line in case the 345 kV line would trip. And that's what's causing that congestion. So when they look at the remedial action scheme, what they're doing is they're saying is if that 345 kV transmission line trips, they're also going to have an automatic trip of the data center load that's in Williston. And so that outage that's causing the overload when they put the remedial action scheme in service immediately trips the data center load. So when they look on this forward-looking sort of basis at the next contingency, they don't see that large low in flow that's going across the 230 line is going to be there like it was this past summer. So basically it resets the clock on the transmission system back to where we were before the data center load was added.
I'm just curious on that scheme. Do they keep track on how many times that's tripped?
So the scheme is a protection scheme. So right. there is a way that you can track as far as how many times that it's actually, you know, it's enabled and it's activated itself. Mm-hmm. And so that is one of the pieces that's tracked and reported. Okay.
Well, and I'm sure the co-op or somebody would be able to, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you said it's tracked, but that data should be tracked. I mean, being tracked, I'm sure the data center is going to say how many times it was. Yeah. My load interrupted.
Sure.
They might know.
I think they'll know. Yeah.
And the neighbors.
Yeah.
There will be a lot of people who know the interruption to cross-check and verify. Yep.
So that's really the largest thing that's changed, you know, in the past year is the addition of that remedial action scheme. Like I said, it basically turns back this contingency to the place we were before the data center load was added. So there ends up being more room on the system. It's just a question of what other loads, you know, are now kind of being added since that point in time.
Okay. Can you tell us anything about the process for getting that remedial action scheme in place and when that happened and anything about that, or is this not the right time for that?
So the remedial action scheme was put in service and was enabled on March 1st. And so part of that, to do that, there ends up being sort of an application, a study, that at least is put together by an entity. In this case, it was Basin. And that had to go through an approval process. An approval of remedial action schemes does go through the RTOs. So it had to go through Southwest Power Pool, their stakeholder process, and then also an approval that it would have had. I think the last one was through the reliability coordinator.
And do you know when that was started? When the approval process was initiated for that?
I think I heard of their work on the remedial action scheme or considering that when I first heard about it. I think it was in October, November of last year.
Wow, so it takes 6 months.
It takes a while through the stakeholder process and at least having all the proper studies done and at least answering all the questions as far as exactly what are the communication paths and kind of how is this going to trip, and then there's a number of modeling studies to make sure, there's not an instability issue that goes along with it.
There must be contractual issues, too. Isn't that customer disadvantaged then when all of a sudden they can be cut off potentially more than what they had initially bargained for?
There would be, and I'm not sure what the conversations are that occurred. You know, I think historically one of the pieces of information I saw was how many times has the 345 kV line actually tripped itself since it's been in service. And it probably is something that's either on one or two fingers that it's actually happened. So the number of times that they would have seen this actual outage happen is very small, based upon that line is new and the design that it had. So the other one is the customer, I think, also probably had a price impact, I'm guessing, as well, just on what pricing was to them, and it's just on some of the rate charges that they would have had from the co-op. So they probably get a price advantage to do this, and the likelihood that it happened is small.
So, I'm sorry, now maybe I have another follow-up question. Maybe I'm not following, but if that 345 has only tripped once or twice and this scheme is going to help, what's the immediate action to help with the congestion then? Has there been anything done? I don't see how this action scheme is going to help that congestion there if that 345 has not tripped and they're going to trip Atlas.
Correct, but the outage, the potential outage that's causing the congestion that we ended up seeing is that contingency where that line trips and it overloads the parallel 230 kV line. So if you reduce the load at the same time the line trips, that also removes some of that flow that's going across the 230 line at the same time. You know, the long-term fixes, you know, in this is kind of one of those short-term stopgaps, are around, you know, the additional transmission build-outs that SPP approved and that Basin is doing around the south side of the lake and the north side of the lake, and then also having more generation additions in that pocket.
What I understand for Sherry, if I'm thinking about, I see what you're saying, and I'm going to throw this out there and see if it's accurate, that the congestion hasn't actually happened. It's just could happen, and so this is all on paper. It hasn't happened. It's overload. A planning thing. The overload
has not happened.
So that's the challenge with all of this is it's, you know, correct. We're paying for something that really hasn't happened. It's just to prevent it from happening or in case it happens.
And that's one of the ways that the RTOs work, and as far as how they end up using the market as far as to maintain reliability. Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the pieces with their state estimators, they're always looking at what is that the next contingency that could happen. And through that process of going and basically redispatching generation just to make sure there isn't an overload or a line that trips if one of those contingencies would happen. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Commissioner, this isn't one of those places. There is a binding or congestion management that's being occurring in the market for reliability's sake,
right,
that where the actual outage has happened almost never.
Right. Yep. Thank you. So I want to go back. So thank you for stepping through
the pages with us. So when we're on page Exhibit B, page 207, and you come down to that 0.00713 rate per kilowatt, okay, that equates to what I believe you said, $7.42 per month?
Right, about $7.40, yeah.
In addition to what they're already.
I'm sorry. I did it on a yearly basis.
So maybe what I could offer at just a different perspective. So really there's two things that are happening this month. One is we're doing a monthly, we're returning to do our monthly fuel and purchase power adjustment, which changes every month, and typically it's pretty small. And then the second piece is the annual true-up. So if we're looking at what is the impact to a customer from the rates that they're charged today to the rates that they'll be charged after April 1, it really comes down on the second page of the letter. The rate is going up 1.6 cents for a secondary customer, which equates to about $13.19 per month.
And that's for the next year. That's the new annual rate.
No.
That's just for April.
So that'll be for April. In May, we'll have a different monthly value. And then kind of getting back to what Tara was talking about, the annual piece of this is about $7.40. So if I break that into two, again, the monthly, you know, updating that, and again, we haven't done that since October, but the monthly piece of that is about $5.80. The annual piece is about $7.40. The combination is about $13.20 a month for a customer using 800. And I think, Commissioner Christman, I think that was your overall question, is what's the impact to a customer when this rate would go into place?
Yeah, and the numbers you just gave, that's if we divide it over 2 years.
That's correct. If not, we would add another $7 and some odd cents to that.
Can you go through those once more, Travis?
Sure.
Is it written in here someplace like that?
If you look on Exhibit A, page 1.
Okay, hold on now. We'll get there. Okay.
This gives you the differences, not necessarily the monthly values, but it'll give you the differences.
Yeah, the month, that would be great because we can add them in there.
So if you, just to look at the secondary column, you can see that this is going back to what Travis was talking about, how there's two components. There's a cost of fuel and purchase power, and then there's the surcharge adjustment. So you can see on our currently effective rates, we the cost of fuel was 3.098, where our current cost of fuel is 3.822 cents, or 0.03822. So a difference of 0.724 cents.
For the month.
For the month.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at the surcharge adjustment, this is showing how the surcharge adjustment that we are proposing is 0.713 cents of a charge versus what was in place for the previous 12 months, which was a credit of 0.212, so a difference of 0.925.
And that's applied every month.
And that surcharge adjustment, yes, is the request is to use that, the calculation over 24 months that resulted in the 0.713 cents, and then have that apply for the next 12 months.
It would be helpful to have what Travis kind of provided in terms of the monthlies included in here. I'm sure that, you know, for you guys dealing with this, the rate is the thing, but that's hard for us to follow because we just don't think in terms of cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easier for us to explain sometimes or navigate what's the impact to me.
Right.
I don't ask them how much kilowatt do you use?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, maybe I do when they look at the bill. But
yeah.
So my question to you is, looking at the history here, we've looked at Stormy Erie and all that. We expanded it a little bit beyond 12 months. I think we looked at 16 months for some recovery. What's your philosophy on moving from 12 months to 24? And a follow-up to that is, do you survey, like, your customers as far as if they see increases, if they'd rather see gradual or just let's just get it done because then I know what my costs are? Other things can happen within your industry where there will be costs. So walk me through that a little bit as far as your philosophy there and if you engage your customers on what their wants or needs are.
And I guess in terms of surveying customers, we have not actively done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think every customer will say, I don't want to pay more. I mean,
that's about like 20 years.
Right.
Well, I mean, they understand so, things happen.
You know, in terms of Winter Storm Uri, yeah, we extended on the gas side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the electric side, we came out really on, you know, there was some timing there, but we really came out of that one unharmed. In terms of this one, you know, the whole reason that we're asking for an extension is really due to the complaint. You know, we are expecting to get some return of that congestion. And if that happens, then, and regardless of whether it happens or not, we will file next year at the same time with an update to what's happened, you know, over the 12 months. But if we were to implement a surcharge based on the balance at 12 months, we could end up over-collecting. And then you turn right around, and then you're refunding the customers. So, you know, that's really the genesis behind changing this.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I don't know that we would be asking for that today.
Go ahead.
So one of the same points Sherry just made, I was going to use, but for a different question. This has always been the annual update has always been like starting in November, right? Or December. When
on the electric side, it's always been April. On the gas side, we do that October 1.
We delayed doing this because this was coming.
So we delayed. So we received a waiver to file our monthly FCA, our fuel and purchase power adjustment.
Okay, so doing this right now is on the normal cycle.
It is.
Okay, I was incorrect on that. That was one of the things that's been bothering me up here.
Yep. And, you know, to kind of step back, you know, when we requested a waiver so that we didn't file, you know, that was really driven by the fact that we had a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, we're rolling into winter. Customers are starting to increase their usage. And what we were seeing was price volatility. And we wanted to kind of, you know, minimize that volatility and get a better handle on what are some options, what are some things that we can do. You know, Darcy and his group have done a lot of investigating. You know, obviously the complaint was filed. So, you know, there's a lot that's going on in this docket right now.
If you several unknowns.
There are still some unknowns out there.
If you get some refunds from the complaint, is your thought that you just might not need the second year? Is that kind of
right, the
thought here? Okay.
Yeah, the idea is we would apply that to the deferral account. And
yeah.
Hope, you know.
Hopefully it'll be exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So in your history of following FERC complaints, like from a utility, is what's your guess on when you might find something out?
So because it's a complaint, there isn't a timeline, you know, that FERC has to follow. So it's one of those things that could certainly, you know, sit there in perpetuity for a while until they act on it. You know, we're kind of hopeful, at least, that the harm that we did show, you know, and the magnitude of cost impact to our customers, you know, is something that they take note of, you know, and one, at least, act upon. You know, we asked for an April 1st date to basically have FERC direct SPP and MISO to terminate the coordination of this constraint, and that way we wouldn't see the duplicative nature of the charges going forward. But, you know, the timing of which that they would, you know, that FERC would acknowledge that a refund is justified and start that process, when that starts, we don't have a time frame or know when that would be.
Your goal here is to, like, have this on our meeting next week so that it could be adopted into the April billings. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct, yeah.
And what if it didn't go that fast? What would be the impact if it was either 11 or 23 months and starting May 1st? What happens then?
So typically what we would do, we'll just continue to charge the rate that's in place today and then implement.
It'd just be recalculated.
We'd probably have to relook at it. My thought is it's going to come out to be a little higher rate if we spread it over 23 or 11 yeah. months, but we would just relook at it and do that.
I'm say this is Victor. I'm not sure that works in this instance. So your request is for a waiver of the standard true-up period, which if the commission doesn't grant that next week, you have to go back to the normal method, which means 12 months of recovery, correct?
I believe that would make sense, Victor.
I think it makes sense to me that the 24-month period was chosen for that, and that's just a way to mitigate the sticker shock and possibly that over and under collecting. Was that the logic behind that, to extend that, basically? You ran the numbers and everything, kind of looking at potential. Why wasn't it longer? Why wasn't it, or kind of logic behind that?
The main reason, yeah, is we expect it's going to take some time to get any type of a refund. You know, to go longer, I just don't know that really makes a lot of sense. But yeah, the main thing was just if we're going to get a refund, you know, that hopefully that 1 year time period would allow that to happen. And again, we would come back next year at this time, regardless of what is decided in our normal time frame, and look at what those balances are and if we need to update those. So,
with it, most if there is a settlement and refunds on the horizon, you'd revert back to the 12 month for the surcharge.
Yes.
Okay.
So would it be possible for you guys to just file an update to this with some of that monthly? Break it all down as simply as you think you can.
Okay.
Like between the regular charge, the surcharge, and the impacts to customers on a monthly basis.
Yep, we can do that.
That'd be great.
Okay.
And I think with each with each category, it's helpful to have that total dollar amount that's being collected along with then the impact. Because, frankly, I got so confused, and you've kind of explained some of it on this case. I went back to a previous case from last fall, and I couldn't seem to make the numbers match either on a certain number of dollars being collected equates to a certain amount of an impact on the customer. And so I just ran out of time trying to get that all figured out. And so when you do these numbers that Julie just requested, if you can always track everything together, I think is helpful, at least to me.
Okay. Yeah, we always run a balance of what's number overload and then what's not enough. But I think this is pretty straightforward. I think we can put that together pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And we could probably even get it done by the end of today or first thing next week. So.
Yeah, because it's Friday. Is this on the agenda for next week?
Not yet.
We would need it to make the deadline for April. Or it would need to be in order to get in advance.
Yeah, that's correct. And we do have a motion and order ready, if depending on which way you guys go with it. So it's very easy to delay that and get it done in time.
I should have said we have a draft order ready.
Anything else?
No. I look forward to the information.
No. Thank you, guys.
Staff, Alif, Victor?
Nope, I'm good. We covered all of my questions, so thank you.
And Travis, do you have anything else that you wanted to add?
I don't think we have anything else. Thanks for the opportunity to present this for you, and we'll get that schedule up to you.
Perfect.
Okay, and there was no new written documents submitted here. All the numbers we were going over were, I think they were all from docket 9, but certainly from our file on the case. So is there any objection to, I guess it would just be the oral testimony today becoming part of the record upon which a decision will be made?
No objection.
None from staff.
Okay, hearing none. Anything else before we close? Okay, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you very much, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you.